Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome Ian Jeffries to our podcast. Ian serves as a president and CEO of the Association of American Railroads down in Washington, D.C. Ian started in his role leading the AAR back in January 2019 when he replaced Ed Hamburger. Prior to that, he served as a senior vice president of the AAR's Government Affairs Group, overseeing the development, promotion, and implementation of legislative priorities for the AAR. Prior to joining the AAR, Ian served as a senior policy advisor to the chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation from 2009 to 2013. Ian, welcome to our podcast.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to get you on. We really appreciate it. Ian, just to get things started, why don't we focus on the weekly data that the AAR issues, I believe it's every Wednesday, for intermodal and rail carload volumes. While the volumes that we've seen, specifically speaking about 2020, obviously we've seen some annual declines brought in due in large part to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, there do seem to be some signs of sequential improvement on a week-to-week basis, perhaps brought about in some ways by the slow reopening of the U.S. economy, as well as some other factors, too. One thing that jumped out was last week, for the week ending June 20th, was the best week for U.S. intermodal movements, for that's intermodal container and trailer volume on a weekly level, going back to the week ending February 1st. So that seemed pretty encouraging. But if you want to just take a few minutes on balance to just talk about what's going on with volumes, I think that'd be a great place for us to start.
Sure, absolutely. And you're right. Coronavirus has certainly had an impact on rail traffic. We often say our business goes as the broader economy goes. And certainly we've all watched the economic impact that the virus has had across the U.S. And rail traffic certainly was indicative of that, and I believe at the trough we were about 20% off of where we were, over spring of 2019, and right. Certainly, that is a substantial decrease. Certainly, there were other industries that suffered, far worse than our industry did. So I'm thankful for that, but we have over the past several weeks started to see some climbing out of what we hope will prove to have been the bottom. And in particular, you're absolutely right. Intermodal seems to be coming back a decent bit. I think, we were off, like I said, around 20%. I think that last week we were down about 4% from where we were last week. But when you consider commodity groups, for example, like motor vehicles, most finished auto products and quite a high percentage of components that go into finished autos move on a railroad at some point in time. And when you consider the fact that U.S. auto plants largely shut down for close to 2 months, that was a pretty significant hit on rail traffic. I think we were down about 90% at the low. And so while we're certainly not up where we were this time last year, we've seen a substantial improvement in that commodity group, getting us back. We're off about 24-25% from where we were last year, but you can see that start to come back and that number growing. And I'm certainly looking forward to the day where we see a lot more green on our weekly traffic reports. But sure. Overall, I think all carloads are about 20% off still, but we are seeing improvement in certain areas. Some of the ag products continue to move at an encouraging rate. Coal, of course, is still quite a bit off, and that's due to a broad number of factors beyond just the virus itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is encouraging to see things. I don't know where the wording would be less worse, but there's definitely some signs of improvement afloat. So that's a positive for the sector,
yeah,
to be sure.
Exactly.
And the overall economy at large, too. So shifting gears for a second, Ted is your PR guy. So let's talk about COVID-19. In terms of the impact of it on things like railroad safety, railroad employment safety specifically, as well as service levels too.
Sure. So, you know, employee safety is always going to be, you know, priority number one with our industry. And the country, communities across the country, our customers, you know, they rely on railroads to continue to operate regardless of what's going on. We're a 24/7 business. And we are a business that requires the vast majority of our employees to be on the work site. Our guys and ladies can't work from home in a lot of their roles. So from the outset, railroads took a number of steps to maximize employee safety in a COVID environment. And I'll just say, first and foremost, you know, we are incredibly blessed with an employee base that is really, you know, strict adherence to safety protocols and rigorous operating practices. That's what they do all day, every day, regardless of what's going on. So we were really pleased with the way our employees were able to react and continue to serve at a high level. But several of the steps railroads took, whether it's implementing practices to ensure appropriate social distancing in the workplace, PPE use is pervasive throughout the industry, mm-hmm. Increased sanitization, testing, quarantining, isolation for potential positive cases. So a number of steps were taken and working with, you know, along and often exceeding CDC guidelines. And I would say, you know, the results have been encouraging to date. And a lot of that credit goes to, like I said, the disciplined nature of our workforce. And that was reflected in service levels. Chairwoman Ann Begeman of the Surface Transportation Board meets with a shipper group every week, and you know, she is reflected to the railroad community that she has heard very positive things throughout this, that service has been strong, performance has been strong. So that's certainly something that we're proud of. And again, that goes back to our employees. You know, if they're operating at a high level, the railroad's operating at a high level.
Right. And in times of crisis, it seems like a sector like freight railroad is uniquely equipped and prepared for situations like this. And it really is showing. So that's a real credit to the industry in general. So moving on here, Ian, I noted with the Federal Surface Transportation Reauthorization, the FAST Act, that's set to expire at the end of September.
Right.
House Democrats recently came out with a new proposed authorization entitled the Invest Act. And I know that AAR has been somewhat vocal in regards to some of the bill's rail-related provisions, if you will, that aren't necessarily sitting well with you guys. And I'm just wondering if maybe you could shed some light on some of those things and sort of provide an overview from the AAR's perspective about them in general.
Certainly, and you're spot on that. You know, we do have significant concerns about portions of that bill, and unfortunately, it's a real missed opportunity in our opinion. You know, right now, I think there's a widespread appreciation for the public infrastructure investment needs that this country has, whether it's highways, transit, wastewater, broadband, other types of infrastructure. And it certainly should be an issue that everybody can rally around. But unfortunately, the path that was chosen coming out of the House Transportation Committee was one that unfortunately was, you know, a highly partisan, divisive process that included a number of, you know, highly objectionable policy provisions in the rail title specifically. And it's kind of ironic to us, quite honestly, because as you've probably heard, and we say often, you know, freight railroads invest private capital back into our networks. We invest about $25 billion a year back into our networks. And so we're really not seeking, you know, funding or a lot of other things out of a surface reauthorization. We're supportive of it because we need a fully integrated, fully functioning transportation network, infrastructure network in this country. And so certainly we are supportive of appropriately funded and financed highway programs, for example. But the path that the Democratic leadership and the House committee took, unfortunately, strayed from the focus on funding, which had been our mantra. And there, the provisions, we have a number of provisions of concern, whether it's operating mandates about the number of individuals physically located inside the cab of a locomotive, whether mm-hmm. it's restrictions on cross-border traffic, whether it's prohibitions on certain commodities, including liquefied natural gas. So it's a whole host of bad ideas, in our opinion, and certainly not provisions that are going to help speed along the consideration and passage of what should be important legislation that most folks can get behind. So that's where we find ourselves now. We'll continue to work to improve a product and make it something that we can support at the end of the day. That's our goal.
Okay. That makes all the sense in the world. And I know you had mentioned, just as an aside there, Ian, how freight railroads are largely on the hook financially. You see it with their CapEx numbers. I remember when I used to see Ed Hamburger speak at the Rail Trends Conference and a few other events. He used to say something like the rail spend upwards of 20% or more on their own infrastructure compared to by comparison, the typical manufacturer, which was somewhere in the 3-5% range. Does that stat or ratio still hold true today?
Still rings true today. And our mantra, we've had a lot of good mantras about our private investment over the years. I thought you were going to say that we invest so taxpayers don't have to, because that's our mantra up on Capitol Hill. But yeah, you're spot on. You know, our industry is incredibly capital intensive. So there's an absolute necessity for significant core infrastructure investment every year, year in, year out. And then when you consider any expansion work or other things along those lines, that even further increases that number. But we are investing a significantly higher number of percentage-wise than many other industries out there.
Okay. Yeah, excellent. That's been the common theme, it seems, for forever. Now, just wrapping up here, I just thought it'd be interesting to just to talk a bit about how you think about shipper/rail carrier collaboration. What's sort of the give and take or the ebb and flow there? I know these obviously are not normal times, but maybe if we can provide a more normal environment type of response to just basics, sort of COVID to the side in regards to this question, as we view shipper rail collaboration.
Well, I would hate to throw COVID to the side, so I'll kind of look through that lens into the broader longer term. You know, railroads and shippers, it's a symbiotic relationship. You know, both sides need the other. And that was overwhelmingly evident and continues to be overwhelmingly evident here this spring moving into this summer, where there was a lot of adjusting and flexibility required on both the railroad side and the shipper side, because as you see demands, you know, quickly change, our customers have different needs. And railroads were able to work very well with their customers to make sure that they provided a product to their customers that met their needs in these, you know, drastically swinging economic times. And continue to work with them, you know, looking ahead. We at AAR are not in the forecasting business, but our railroads are working with their customers to identify what they're seeing down the road to make sure that they can flex up as demand continues, hopefully to return and the economy continues to recover. And, you know, to me, that was just it's one data point over a long period of time that really demonstrates, you know, the value that rail can provide to its customer base and the relationship that is built over so many years that really allows our economy to thrive when it comes to rail shippers and the economy writ large. So I would say it's that ability to flex and adjust and, you know, going to work with the customer to make sure their demands are met in good times and in bad. And again, this spring has been a perfect example of that. And we're all looking forward to times when we're moving a lot more of our customers' traffic for a thriving economy.
No question about it. Well said. Well, we're at the end of our our allotted time for today's podcast. On behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you to the AAR's Ian Jefferies for joining us today. So Ian, thanks again very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on and enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. You got it. And for those of you out there on social media, specifically on Twitter, don't forget to give us a follow at LogisticsMGMT. And also please give the AAR a follow at AAR_FreightRail. That concludes our podcast for today. Thanks everybody for tuning in.